This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago.
Good afternoon. Welcome on into another edition of White Sox Weekly, March 1st edition. That's right. We've hit March. We just zoomed right past that lousy smarch weather, if you know what I mean. Welcome on into White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller on your home of the Chicago White Sox, ESPN 1000. If you have your scorecards at home, a quick reminder that the next White Sox broadcast on ESPN 1000 comes your way tomorrow. That's Sunday at 2 p.m. when the Sox will take on the Dodgers at Camelback Ranch. Technically, the Sox will be the road team, as the Sox, of course, share Camelback with the Dodgers. But home or road, you know that Len and DJ will be on the call for your home of the White Sox. Again, Sunday, that's tomorrow at 2 p.m. right here on ESPN 1000 and the ESPN Chicago app. All right, so last week we were getting psyched, getting ready for some of that warm weather that rolled in this past week here in Chicago, and getting excited about finally having some spring training games coming our way. And we've gotten a bunch this week, and unfortunately, on Thursday, I think this is the biggest takeaway so far of the early spring, because you want the guys to get their work in, but I'll always caution not to put too much stock into what you see and what you don't see in spring training. But what is tangible is what happened on Thursday when Andrew Benintendi stepped to the plate.
Base, and you have to do that because balance is everything for a hitter. When Benintendi got his, he turned it on second half and he got hit.
Got hit by a pitch there. As he walks it off down to first base. This one catches him.
Not so great. Josh Fallon is out there having a word with him.
And a word indeed was had. Eventually, Andrew Benintendi would be lifted from the game. And then afterwards, we got word that Andrew Benintendi did indeed break his right hand. Now, it was a non-displaced fracture. The timetable is that Benintendi will be out 4 to 6 weeks. That happened on February 27th. So even if you're looking at the most optimistic timeline, 4 weeks, that would put you at March 27th, which is indeed the Sox opener, which means Andrew Benintendi, even though the White Sox have not officially ruled him out for opening day, again, 4 to 6 weeks, even the most optimistic of timelines seems very, very aggressive and ambitious. Would not expect the White Sox to rush him out there before he's ready. Obviously, you want to, you'd love to have him out there on opening day. But the reality is, a broken hand, you're going to have to let that heal 4 to 6 weeks, bones. Nothing you can really do about it. Not going to expedite the timeline, especially when the White Sox are just starting out. So that's unfortunate. Andrew Benintendi breaking his hand on Thursday. So he will, for all intents and purposes, miss the Sox home opener probably a couple weeks into April. And then you'd anticipate, of course, that he's going to need a little bit of time down in the minors just to get himself back into the groove, because of course getting his timing down in spring training. So this is certainly not ideal, not the way the White Sox wanted to start the first week of spring training. But the reality is, injuries are a part of the game. And what does that mean? Well, it means next man up opportunity for somebody on the White Sox roster to make the most of it. And we'll talk more about that as the show continues. But, of course, the newsy thing there, Andrew Benintendi out 4 to 6 weeks with that non-displaced fracture of his right hand. I did, though, want to give us a little bit of positive news, because Colson Montgomery, who actually was scratched in that same Thursday game where Benintendi broke his right hand due to back spasms. Colson Montgomery, though, did start the season out well. He stepped to the plate in his first spring training at bat.
I like it. I don't know how you feel about it, but if you're going to play every day in the major leagues, you're going to face guys like this. Swing and a fly ball deep center field, and it's going to go. Colson Montgomery, a two-run homer, and they're on the board.
Well, on that note, Len, as you said, you like it. Everybody likes that result as Montgomery got down on a fastball and drove it to the big part of the ballpark. No problem down here in Arizona for that one to carry out.
So good news there, Colson Montgomery, just as we've already talked about, mentioned it last week right here on White Sox Weekly, that he seems somebody who in his second spring training, after having an opportunity to get his sea legs, if you will, after last year, looked a lot more comfortable in that first at bat. So that's encouraging. Of course, I said, mentioned dealing with the back spasms. Hopefully that's not too serious. We'll continue to monitor that. We'll obviously be watching that all spring training long. But I would imagine that's just your usual aches and pains that come with once you've ramped up all of the additional work that you do in spring training that you haven't been doing. So not overly concerned about a 23-year-old, but of course something we'll continue to monitor. When you look at it, though, so how does this break down? Without Benintendi for the next 4 to 6 weeks, left field is no doubt going to have to be filled. Will it be filled by the veteran Michael A. Taylor, who, of course, is a very great defensive player, but offensively sometimes leaves something a little bit lacking? Could it potentially be Austin Slater? That's an option as well. Or will it be what I suspect could be the best solution, and that is working with a conjunction of a couple of options for the White Sox here? And first and foremost would be an everyday role being carved out by Lenin Sosa, who's hitting the ball pretty well lately.
Instead, he puts it in play, a rocket past the third baseman. Two will score. They're going to wave in Narvaez. Here's the play to the plate, and they got him.
Lenin Sosa already looking better at the plate, and at 25 years old, you wonder if this could potentially be his breakout season, finally having the opportunity to play in an everyday role, maybe make second base his home, especially, like I said, now with Benintendi going to likely miss the first couple weeks of the season. There should be some at-bats for the White Sox when you kind of look around the diamond and at some of the possibilities here. Of course, Miguel Vargas, he's somebody who could play left field if needed. He is slated, I think, to be the player who receives the most at-bats at the designated hitter position, but we know he certainly is a capable glove man. He can play left field. He can play a little bit of third base. He even played second base at times for the Dodgers. So Vargas and Sosa both could, I think, be moved around a little bit to cover some of the at-bats lost by Benintendi. Of course, Josh Rojas, a nice off-season addition by the White Sox and Chris Getz, should likely also be in the mix. Again, he could play second, he can play third, he can play the corner outfield spots for you. So, and then finally, Brandon Drury, who we've seen a little bit. If he hits in spring training, he certainly could be an answer, somebody who's played the corner outfield spots and first and second base in his time in the majors. So a lot of options for the Sox. They do have, it looks like on paper, much better depth than what they had last year. So that's encouraging, something that I'm looking at. And of course, it's not the way you want to start spring training, an injury to your highest paid player in Andrew Benintendi. But at least you look at it and the White Sox have some depth to work with. So that is the one encouraging thing that I will point to. Now, did not have time last week. It was still being announced. But on Saturday, we did get word from the White Sox. They have indeed brought back Mike Clevinger. Now, this was interesting. Chris Getz addressed this after the White Sox made the announcement that they brought back Mike Clevinger.
Unfortunately, last year, Clev, you know, really couldn't get going with you know, the injury, primarily with his neck, and he had a procedure done that he feels and the doctors feel that is behind him now. And so we felt like bringing him to the camp on a non-roster, getting a chance to show us if he can help our team in some capacity was, you know, a worthy look. You know, we went to go see him this offseason while he was throwing a side session. We've been tracking, you know, his pitch data that he has shared with us. And, you know, curious enough to see what it looks like in a minor league deal.
So that was White Sox general manager Chris Getz talking about the decision to bring back Mike Clevinger. Here's more from Getz on what exactly it's going to take to get Mike Clevinger back and ready during spring training.
Through the years, obviously, he understands, you know, what it takes from a, you know, workload capacity as a starter. You know, last year with that injury, he had a tough time, you know, going to deeper into games. So we're going to start small here. And like I said, I think, you know, getting a look in shorter stints, you know, could be exciting to see, you know, if his stuff plays up and he responds well from a health standpoint.
There was more from Chris Getz on the potential to use Mike Clevinger out of the bullpen this year.
We're open-minded in terms of role. I know that he is as well. I've always had a little bit of a curiosity of what it could look like in a bullpen role. So, you know, he's someone that wants a look, and we're willing to give him one.
So this is interesting because obviously when former starters oftentimes move to relief roles, you'll see that their stuff plays up because they no longer need to pace themselves for that, you know, 80, 90, 100 pitch outing. They can just go out, let it fly, and oftentimes you'll see an increase in velocity, a tick or two. And so Getz was asked about the possibility of Clevinger potentially even being their closer.
Got weapons that can get both-sided hitters out. He's got the mentality to do it, and he's you know, he's pitched in big moments at the major league level. So he's got traits that indicate that he could be good at any role in the bullpen, including the back end.
And so in light of the fact that Prelander Baroa, somebody who I mentioned here last week on White Sox Weekly, now is dealing with an elbow injury and we'll have to wait on the updates for his return, but he was somebody who was a potential arm who could close things out. Of course, Justin Anderson, somebody who I think if you initially began spring training pointed as at him as the likely first option to close out games, although I will mention he did not have a good outing earlier this week, so he'll have to turn the page on that one. Of course, again, spring training, a lot of pitchers working on different things, so not going to get too alarmist about it, but worth noting. And so it looks like there is the opportunity potentially if Clevinger's stuff does play up. And I think Getz hit on it, right? A veteran, a savvy veteran who has that mentality of pitching in the biggest of games. So, you know, again, March 1st here, but kind of looking ahead at the possibilities of arms in the pen for the White Sox that can close it out. And I think Mike Clevinger is somebody who we will certainly be keeping an eye on as we move forward here in spring training. Hey, White Sox fans. Baseball is back. Join us at Wright Field for opening day, as I mentioned earlier, on March 27th, as we take on the Los Angeles Angels at 3:10 p.m. The first 20,000 fans in attendance will receive a 125-year anniversary plush blanket presented by BMO. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. Where would you rather be on White Sox opening day, right? At Wright Field. Come join me. We'll all be there having a great time. It will be a fantastic day at the ballpark. All right, up next, earlier this week, we got a sneak peek at the future, and it did not disappoint. I will share that with you coming up next, right here on White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
White Sox Weekly.
On Chicago's home for sports.
On the ESPN Chicago app. 100.3 HD2 and ESPN 1000.
This is Chicago's home for sports.
On app.
The ESPN Chicago app.
In HD.
FM 100.3 HD2.
And of course on AM.
ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
Going to hypnotize you with a little bit of White Sox Weekly right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. I am Jeff Meller. Reminder, next White Sox broadcast can be heard right here on your home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000, tomorrow at 2 p.m. when the White Sox take on the Dodgers. White Sox will be the road team again, but they'll be at Camelback, so Sox will feel at home at the very least. I am Jeff Meller again, and I mentioned earlier this week we got a little sneak peek of what looks to be a very bright future with a couple of very impressive young left-handed flamethrowers. Let's go with that for now. There'll be a lot of different ways for us to find to describe both Noah Schultz and Hagan Smith. But when I mention describe, let's actually hear how Noah Schultz's first spring training out was described by his father, Larry, courtesy of CHSN.
Noah's put a lot of work in through the years, a lot of time, a lot of sacrifices on his part. And I think, you know, this is his dream to be pitching at the major league level. And double play.
I'm applauding too.
And it's been his dream to get here. So I'm very happy for him and proud of him, the work he's put in.
That's a pretty cool moment as a dad. I know Jay Moore is a dad. Jay Moore on the other side of the glass right now. Like, listen, a dad being able to watch his son in his first major leagues. I know it's spring training. It's not regular season just yet, but watching him partake in his first spring training experience. Good work by CHSN to have Brooke Fletcher out there interviewing him in that moment. And then you could hear it in his voice, right? Like just how proud he is to watch his son go out and get his first out, the double play. Now, I don't anticipate Noah Schultz actually getting a whole lot of his outs via non-strikeouts, because that's something that Noah Schultz brings to the table. He's just an absolute tantalizing prospect. He is, I'm going to keep saying this, he's listed at 6'9", but he did say at Sox Fest earlier in January this year that he actually has grown to 6'10". So I haven't seen the White Sox update the media guides just yet, so we'll be waiting on that. But I'm going to keep continuing to go with that until I hear otherwise, that the 6'10" lefty is certainly impressive. Now, you heard there the call on CHSN. Noah Schultz talked a little bit about what it was like to make his spring training debut.
Yeah, I was just excited. You know, I was really stoked to go out there. I'm happy with the results.
Well, just overall, what did you want to work on today and being able to execute any pitches that you were able to throw as well?
Yeah, I mean, it was big focus on, you know, first pitch strike. I think I did a couple of those, so I'm happy with that. Went out and got outs, so I'm happy with that.
Just the whole experience, just getting the opportunity to get on out and practice the team. Were there any jitters that you had to?
Yeah, I mean, for sure. I think there definitely were, but at the end of the day, it's the same game, and I know I was excited to go out there.
So there you go, Noah Schultz after the one-inning debut. Now, he did not strike anybody out, as I mentioned, but that's something we will certainly see moving forward. Lots of strikeouts, I anticipate, from Noah Schultz. Curious because, you know, I talked to Kylie McDaniel about a month ago right here on White Sox Weekly. If you missed it, you can always go back and check out the podcast on the ESPN Chicago app. Went in-depth with Kylie McDaniel, who is ESPN's prospect analyst. He released his top 100, and we talked a lot about Noah Schultz and, you know, the high-end talent that he has. He's the top-rated left-handed pitcher in all of minor league baseball. So will we see Noah Schultz this year at the major league level? Can't say definitively, but I would not count it out necessarily. So, you know, that's something that we'll be monitoring throughout the season. Wouldn't be surprised if he does get a cup of coffee later in the season, especially if he's dominating the minor leagues like we all hope he will. But, you know, that frame and the ball comes on you quick when you have somebody who's just with those long levers coming at you and throwing that hard. He's, you know, had an elite strikeout rate at the minor league level throughout his baseball career. So really excited, and it was good to see him get that first inning under his belt, even though he did not just strike out. Like I said, if you want to go hear more on it, listen to the Kylie McDaniel episode. Again, I think it was February 1st when I talked to him about Noah Schultz. So definitely worth a listen if you're somebody who missed it and you're a big Sox fan who's looking at the future. That is something you're going to want to go ahead and check out. Now, as much success as Noah Schultz has had as a strikeout artist, Hagan Smith, who was the White Sox top first-round pick last year, number 4 overall, also a lefty, who was a dominant lefty in college. Hagan Smith actually got a crack at his first major league taste against the Padres in that same game that Noah Schultz got the double play. After Schultz was done, Hagan Smith comes out. And I mean, listen, if you're a Major League Baseball team, you see these two lefties coming at you back-to-back, that's just absolutely absurd. That won't be the case. I wouldn't anticipate. And in fact, if anything, you'll probably, the way it would be set up in the future, if all things go according to plan for the White Sox, is you will see maybe a Noah Schultz and a Hagen Smith on back-to-back days, not in back-to-back innings. But Hagen Smith actually did come out and actually struck out the side. So that was very impressive to see. And Hagen Smith talked about his debut, which you would say, hey, struck out the side, gave up one hit, no runs. That's pretty successful. What did Hagen Smith think?
Yeah, it was, I mean, numbers-wise, it went well, but I didn't think I'd throw that at me. I mean, kind of worked out some jams, but not a clean like I wanted, but it was good.
What, too many out of the zone, or what was your, what were you?
Just like, for me, just like letting that runner go to third. Like, I just, mentally, I knew I felt like he was going to go. I just, my look, I didn't get my looks in, so that's on me, but sorry.
But to have that opportunity to kind of work through something like that, you know, that's part of spring as well, right?
Yeah, it's awesome. You know, catcher's calling a really good game and went out there and just executed. Kind of got punched in the face a little bit after that hit. A guy had to battle through some stuff, which I like, though.
I mean, to kind of have a point where you're facing kind of major hitters for the first time and having to battle through and seeing that you can turn your slider, what was that experience like?
Yeah, it was really cool. You know, I didn't know what it was going to be like facing those guys, but, you know, it's only one game, so I got to keep doing that. It's just spring training.
So there you go, the Arkansas Razorback product, Hagen Smith striking out the side, but certainly talked about how it wasn't clean, didn't want to give up that hit. You like to see that, but again, you know, striking out the side, I don't think you could ask for much more from that. Pretty cool to see Noah Schultz, Hagen Smith go back-to-back earlier this week on Wednesday against the Padres. Also, Noah Schultz talked about his bond with Hagen Smith. He said, quote, "It's pretty awesome being with him. So close in age and everything. I don't have a brother. I have two sisters. But at least for the season, it's the closest thing I have to that." So, again, you know, to have the top two rated lefty pitchers in all of baseball, and, you know, not just the fact that they're left-handed, but we're talking about potential top-of-the-rotation dominant lefties. And let's be honest. The White Sox know a thing or two about grooming lefties. When you look at they traded away Garrett Crochet earlier this winter, but they clearly knew what they were doing. We saw a great season from Garrett Crochet last year as a starter. Of course, Chris Sale, White Sox fans saw plenty of dominant seasons from Chris Sale, who actually went on to win his first Cy Young last year for the Atlanta Braves. And then, of course, a man who's getting a statue later this year at Wrigley Field, July 11th. That's Mark Burley. So the White Sox know a thing or two about having left-handers front their rotation, and it certainly looks like they've got a couple of good ones coming down the pike here. So something to be very excited about. Injury update on Drew Thorpe from Will Venable. This was Will Venable earlier this week on Thorpe. He said he feels good. He's getting his work in and continues to progress. The next thing for him is to spin some baseball. He's done it in his flat ground work, but he's just been fastball changeup in his bullpens. Just excited for him to be healthy. So that was some encouraging news from White Sox skipper Will Venable regarding Drew Thorpe. Again, another highly touted prospect who we got a glimpse of a little bit last year before he was dealing with that elbow issue. But again, good news on the horizon here with that update from Will Venable earlier this week. So happy to see that. And then another man who this guy we know is going to be in the rotation, and that, of course, is Davis Martin. He had a nice, productive outing in his first spring training work as well. A couple of innings, no earned runs. Davis Martin talked about his first outing of the season.
Just, you know, being aggressive in the zone. We talked about setups with catchers, you know, being more centrally located in the plate, especially early in counts, to make sure that we're attacking early, attacking through the heart of the plate, and then expanding off late. So Dice had a great setup back there, and everything's just working really well today.
But you said it's your first road Cactus League game. Just going off last year and how you feel coming back this year, you must just be in great great spirits, great flow, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I tell everybody, like, all the mundane things that, you know, some guys hate about spring training, it's like I'm very excited about, you know, traveling, trying to do all this stuff, finding different stadiums that I have never played at in spring training. So very simple things that, you know, maybe an older guy takes for granted. It's definitely something I'm relishing and really enjoying compared to last year.
Davis Martin, after, again, a successful spring opener for him this year, As you would expect, Davis Martin will be in the rotation. Martin Perez, who was a nice addition for the Sox, he'll no doubt be in the rotation, as will Jonathan Cannon. Those three spots are absolutely set. You know, no particular order just yet. Will Venable hasn't set up his rotation. Don't anticipate we'll see that for another couple of weeks. In fact, I guess, you know, if you press me right now, I would guess that Martin Perez will get the ball on opening day, but I think Jonathan Cannon certainly has a shot at it if he has a good spring. So maybe the White Sox dangle that carrot in front of Jonathan Cannon to make him go out and execute and prove that some of the gains he had last year are real. And if he does that, maybe he will get the nod. Or, again, they could give it to the veteran Martin Perez. The opening day start again on Thursday, March 27th. So something to keep an eye on. We'll be watching throughout. But those three rotation spots I would expect to be set at this point. Then after that, the question would be, I think if you had to right now set it, I think you're probably looking at Sean Burke, who's really, you know, his stock has risen lately, and he's really looked good, especially at the end of the year. Some increased velocity, seeing some more strikeouts from him, which in this day and age is how you can reliably keep runs off the board. At least that's the best way to do it in baseball. So Sean Burke, I think, is probably going to grab one of those spots as long as he continues to look good. And then finally, Bryce Wilson, I think, would potentially round out your five-man rotation. But it's so funny, right, because I get into this mode of mapping out the five-man rotation out of habit. But the reality is, in 2025, the five-man rotation is kind of going the way of the dodo bird in some ways. Is it extinct? Maybe not when you set the depth charts, when you go to MLB.com, maybe they still give you five, or you search around on Roster Resource on FanGraphs. Maybe they set it up for five. But the reality is, we're living in a day and age where 6 and 7 man rotations are becoming the norm. So maybe it's a futile, maybe it's a kind of a fool's errand that I'm embarking upon trying to map it out right now so early into spring training. But listen, I think it's kind of what you do if you're a baseball fan with your favorite baseball team, is you kind of look at the depth chart and map it out and figure out things early on as you're consuming all this spring training baseball. This is White Sox Weekly. I am Jeff Meller here on the home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. White Sox fans, enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for a chance to win one-of-a-kind experiences all season long. Don't miss your chance to win the ultimate tailgate, attend Chicago's hottest summer events, exclusive City Connect items, and more. To learn more and enter today, visit whitesox.com/sweepstakes. Up next, we go around the majors right here on White Sox Weekly.
This is White Sox Weekly on Chicago's home for sports, ESPN Chicago. Follow Chicago's Home for Sports on Twitter at ESPN 1000.
Welcome to White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This week in baseball, as we roll around the majors, catch you up to date on everything going on around baseball. Right here on White Sox Weekly, I am Jeff Meller, here on your home of the White Sox ESPN 1000. Again, quick reminder, next White Sox game coming your way tomorrow, Sunday, 2 o'clock. Len and DJ on the call as the Sox will take on the Dodgers at Camelback Ranch. But again, the White Sox will be the road team in this one, sharing the facility with the Dodgers. So Sox on the road, the rare road game at Camelback for the White Sox. But as I mentioned last week, because it's a shared facility, they do have the ABS, the automated balls and strike system, in place. And so White Sox and Dodgers tomorrow will have that at their disposal. Again, I brought that up last week. I ran you through all the rules, and not sure if you've had the opportunity to actually see it in use, but, you know, it is, there's no time at all. It takes mere seconds if a batter or a pitcher challenges. You know, the batter just, you know, taps their helmet if they want to challenge, and then sure enough, they go to the review system. You see it on the board, and it's seamless. And so I know that Major League Baseball, they're trying it out. They're not necessarily going to implement it this year, but I think if you see it in action, there's, you know, it doesn't feel like there's any reason why they shouldn't. Now, how well equipped are all Major League Baseball stadiums? That is, I guess, the real question. I'll have to dig a little deeper, try and get that information for you moving forward, if it's even a possibility this year, if they wanted to implement it. But it seems very likely, just based on 1 week of action, that next year, 2026, I don't think there's any doubt that we will be seeing the automated balls and strike system in play across Major League Baseball. Now, funnily enough, Max Scherzer, who is now in the Blue Jays, he's skeptical of the automated balls and strike system. And I don't know. Maybe it's just because as a pitcher, Max Scherzer having a very successful career, no doubt a Hall of Fame career, once he finally hangs up the spikes, he will no doubt be headed to Cooperstown, but he has voiced some skepticism regarding it. Maybe it's just because all those borderline calls that pitchers greatly benefit from a home plate ump, maybe, you know, the most egregious ones will no longer go in the pitcher's favor. So maybe that's why Max Scherzer is ultimately skeptical. Maybe it's just selfish motivation from a pitcher who knows that things aren't going to go his way the way they once did. Elsewhere around Major League Baseball, on Tuesday this past week, the Washington Nationals agreed to terms with Kyle Finnegan, their closer from last year. Now, Finnegan was somebody who registered over 30 saves for them and was rumored to be a player who would have been dealt at the deadline. I guess a deal never materialized for the Nationals of their liking, so they kept Finnegan on the roster for the entirety of the season and then come to a one-year deal with him. So he'll be back closing games for the Nats. How long? You know, are they just going to run it back with the same mindset that maybe this year at the deadline they can offload him to a contender? Because you wouldn't think that the Nationals are going to be in contention in the National League East. It's just such a loaded division that what the Nationals are doing right now, probably in all likelihood, not going to be extremely competitive. So I would imagine, even though they inked him to a one-year deal, wouldn't be surprised to see Kyle Finnegan dealt at the trade deadline at the end of July this year. Another note, the Yankees, Giancarlo Stanton is in New York undergoing some medical tests. He's dealing with injuries. Doesn't sound like he's going to be available for opening day for the Yankees. Wondering if Stanton actually will ultimately end up, if he's going to be able to hit 500 home runs. You know, he's dealing with a lot of injuries now at this stage of his career, and it was something that felt like a lock, but now at this point, not necessarily sure. We'll have to see how his career unfolds at this point, but he's hitting the stage of his career as an older guy who maybe not going to be able to bounce back the way he once did. Stanton's former teammate Juan Soto, now playing on the other side of town for the New York Mets. Juan Soto playing on the other side of town of Stanton. He hit a home run in his first at-bat for the Mets earlier this week when he stepped into the plate, a 426-foot shot. So certainly still has quite a bit of work to do if he's going to earn every last dollar of that $765 million contract that he signed this past offseason. But he got right to work for the Mets. Now, I mentioned this last week at the very end of the show because it was rolling in some late-breaking news, but the Yankees have officially changed their facial hair policy. This was something that was quite the topic across all social media platforms, and they have now finally adjusted, and they've said that they're going to allow well-groomed beards. Seems like a long time coming at this point. So, you know, I wonder how much of that was directly related to Devin Williams, the closer who the Yankees obtained in the offseason from the Milwaukee Brewers. You know, multi-time All-Star Devin Williams, one of the best closers in the game, also well-known for his facial hair. And, you know, I wonder if he, a little bit of pushback from him maybe helped spur that new facial hair rule. You know, I should have mentioned this earlier because when I was doing the ABS talk, but Terry Francona, the Reds manager, has actually barred his veterans from using the ABS challenge system, which is somewhat odd to me when you think about it. If it's going to come into play now, I guess Francona's reasoning is because it's not going to be instituted this year, he doesn't want his veterans to get in the habit of relying on it or utilizing it. Kind of odd when you think about it. He's saying the younger players who actually are familiar with the ABS system from their time in the minor leagues, they're allowed to actually use it. But Francona was not necessarily completely on board with the ABS system just yet. A couple more injury notes here. I mentioned the Brewers with the Devin Williams trade there. Blake Perkins, he's set to miss the start of the season with a shin fracture, so he'll likely miss quite a bit of time for the Brewers. And then finally, Mets left-handed starter Sean Manaea, who had a really nice breakout season last year, one of his better years. He's likely to start the season on the injured list with an oblique injury, and that's always a rough one because when you they're so tricky. When you get the oblique injury, whether you're a pitcher or a hitter, the hard part is you take the time off, and then you get back out there. And, you know, the core muscles are so critical in this version of baseball where velocity and, swinging as hard as you possibly can to catch up to that velocity for hitters. It's just obliques are becoming more and more prevalent. Oblique injuries are becoming more and more prevalent across baseball. And they're just so tricky to know when to get back because you go out there, you kind of try and ease your way back in. And then you don't really know if you're completely healed until you kind of just start letting it fly, whether you're a pitcher or, you know, absolutely letting it rip if you're a hitter. And then you get back out there, you finally start, you know, going full bore with the extreme cuts or letting the velocity go as much as you possibly can. And then all of a sudden, when you finally go, you know, max effort, that's when you find out if you're truly healed. So it's always a tricky injury. You have to almost give it that extra week or two. So, again, that's why it looks like Sean Manaea for the Mets is likely to start the season on the injured list for them. And then finally, one final note, sad note here. Cleveland Guardians owner earlier this week, Lawrence Dolan, died at the age of 94. I am Jeff Meller. This is White Sox Weekly. Hey, White Sox fans, cover your bases with the new Ballpark Pass. For a limited time, get access to every home game in March, April, and May. That's right, March, April, and May. And by the way, lots of great home games coming your way. You've got the Twins, division rival in town. You've got the Red Sox. You've got the Brewers in April. In May, you get the Astros coming for a three-game set. You've got the Mariners. You've got the 2023 World Series champs, Texas Rangers in town. So lots of great options to go check out. Again, the Ballpark Pass. Cover your bases with the new Ballpark Pass for a limited time. Get access to every home game in March, April, and May. Your Ballpark Pass includes tickets to opening day and exclusive giveaways celebrating the unforgettable moments, legendary players, and iconic eras that have shaped the 125-year legacy. To purchase, visit whitesox.com/ballparkpass. All right, when we come back, we will wrap things up. White Sox fans, longtime White Sox fans, got some sad news earlier this week, wanted to pass along. You may have already seen this, but a man who was responsible for a lot of great memories for White Sox fans, no doubt, who go to games at Wright Field. We lost him earlier this month, so I wanted to bring that to you coming up next. Again, right here on White Sox Weekly on ESPN 1000.
This is White Sox Weekly.
On the home of the Chicago White Sox.
ESPN 1000. We are talking White Sox.
This is White Sox Weekly.
If you missed the show, we put the podcast up on the ESPN Chicago app. So listen on your time.
White Sox Weekly. ESPN Chicago. Chicago's home for sports.
Wrapping things up here on White Sox Weekly, I am Jeff Meller. Hey, Sox fans, head to the ballpark on Saturday, March 29th, first Saturday game of the year, regular season that is, of course, as the White Sox take on the Angels at 110. The first 15,000 fans in attendance will receive a 1907 replica jersey presented by Rush. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. All right, as we close things out here on White Sox Weekly, I do want to say thanks to Jay Moore for producing today's show, stepping up in a pinch here for executive producer of White Sox Baseball, Brendan Riley. Thank you, Jay Moore. Great work by him, as always. You can hear Jay Moore with Cap and Jay Hood weekdays here on the home of the White Sox, ESPN 1000. All right, so sad news. Saw this last Sunday. Daryl Van Scown, who does a great job covering the White Sox for the Chicago Sun-Times, tweeted this out, and it was actually written by Mitch Dudek. And now, if you're a longtime White Sox fans, White Sox fan, chances are that if you've gone to White Sox games over the years, you spent plenty of time back in the days at Jimbo's Lounge. Now, Jimbo's has since closed. And I saw over the past week here that Joseph G. Jimbo Lovato, the owner of Jimbo's Tavern, died at the age of 89. And he was, he had the tavern there, right there near the ballpark, that if you're a Sox fan, it was just, you know, the quintessential Sox bar to go visit before a game, get there early, hang out, you know, before they really had the tailgate option open in the parking lot at Wright Field. Before you had that, you know, back in the day, you'd go to Jimbo's, you'd grab a beer before you headed on in to see the Sox. And, you know, throughout, I remember as a kid growing up in the early 90s, you know, going with my buddy Kevin Cousy and his dad Gino bringing us to ball games. And it was always like the must stop spot, Jimbo's, right before a game, grab a quick beer. Obviously, we were not of drinking age, so we'd grab ourselves a pop. Gino would grab himself a beer. We'd usually meet up with a couple of buddies who were going to the game as well, and spent a lot of time before White Sox games at Jimbo's Tavern. And, he was a great guy. Great work. I'll tweet out the link to the Chicago Sun-Times for all those who missed it. Again, good work by Mitch Dudek, really kind of encapsulating the man, Jimbo Lovato. He was a longtime 16-inch softball player. He actually is in the Chicago 16-inch Softball Hall of Fame, played in the outfield for decades before he actually, in his 50s, moved to the mound as a pitcher. There was one little nugget here which just made me laugh, because they mentioned that Jimbo's, which was, located on Princeton Avenue and West 33rd Street, right across from Armour Square Park. They mentioned in this article that Jimbo Lovato he'd play in some golf outings. He wasn't a big golfer. He'd play in some, just your local, not celebrity golf outings, but, you know, a golf outing with friends. And one of the nuggets which made me laugh was, he brought one club when he went golfing, his driver, because he loved driving. Didn't really care about the game of golf, but Jimbo would bring his driver to the course and just crush it. And then whatever happened there, no worries. But, sad news there. Jimbo Lovato passing away at the age of 89 earlier this month here. So he will be missed. Brought a lot of joy to a lot of White Sox fans. That's going to do it for me, folks, here on White Sox Weekly. Quick reminder, again, don't forget, next White Sox game coming your way, White Sox and Dodgers, tomorrow, Sunday afternoon at 2 o'clock. Len and DJ on the call. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of White Sox Weekly right here on your home of the Chicago White Sox, ESPN 1000.